Welcome to GovInnovator. I'm Andy Feldman. The balanced scorecard was first introduced by Harvard Business School professor Robert Kaplan and management consultant David Norton in a 1992 Harvard Business Review article. The concept quickly became one of the most well-known approaches to performance management in the private sector. The balanced scorecard was developed out of a concern that companies were placing too much emphasis on financial indicators without paying attention to other drivers of long-term success. Since then, public sector organizations have adopted the balanced scorecard as well. One of the leading experts on this topic is Ken Thompson, a professor of management at the Kelstadt Graduate School of Business at DePaul University. He's the co-author, with Nicholas Matthies, of an IBM Center for the Business of Government report focused on applying the balanced scorecard to government agencies. He joins us by phone from Chicago. Ken, welcome.
Hi, thanks, Andy. It's a pleasure to be here.
I gave a very quick overview of the balanced scorecard. How do you explain it in your words?
A balanced scorecard is a way to go beyond just looking at a myopic short-term financial perspective. It looks more at overall financially what our shareholders are looking for in our organizations, our different customer stakeholders, what are they expecting, what are their requirements. It looks at internally our processes and are they performing well. And we look at learning and development or growth, looking at what are we going to be in the future. And this is so much different than before, because before companies would look basically at how are we doing right now. So short run profits were the goal, which leads to maybe degradation of the long term viability of the organization.
We know that in government, the bottom line is not profit, but key outcomes related to the mission of the organization. How was the concept of the balanced scorecard adapted to that setting?
In 2000, Kaplan and Norton did an article that really progressed their 1992 article, because the 1992 gave basically the four elements. In the 2000 article, they actually organized these, saying, in a government sense, we got to turn some of those around. So specifically, customer is the outcome. Financials next, then internal processes, then learning and growth. For example, a government unit, they're focusing on particular outcomes for society. So that's a customer segment. Another customer segment where finance is important is the funding body. You have to show that you're efficient and effectively using resources to encourage that funding body to continue funding at a particular level. So now these customers aren't just what we consider like retail customers, but there are other stakeholders.
So to recap for our listeners, the balanced scorecard says make sure you're tracking, as an organization, a so-called balanced set of indicators. In other words, financial, customer-related, internal processes, and basically strategies for improvement, which they call learning and growth. The same four categories are relevant for government, but the conceptual order may be a bit different. Ken, you studied how the balanced scorecard was successfully used by the U.S. Postal Service, which is a quasi-governmental organization. Tell us about that.
They were looking first, trying to improve their funding, but they also had the problem of having thousands of units, post offices. So they wanted to develop a more unified sort of structure. So by focusing on determining customer requirements first, the different, individual, first-class users, bulk users, magazine users, fourth-class, and priority mail service, they could focus in on what are those requirements of each group. Then they developed what's called a national performance assessment group that then used these numbers and started identifying performance requirements of each postmaster or regional managers. So by focusing on those customers as well as still, there's still financial issues, and now how to realign their processes to meet each of those two needs. So it's really helped them focus their process.
You provided an example of how the new set of indicators that the Postal Service was using, particularly around customer outcomes, helped change the incentives so that different offices started seeing each other as more on the same team. Tell us that example, if you would.
Okay. The Ileana region, that's right near Kentucky. The person in charge of that region is assessed for how long a mail takes to get from that area, which is Louisville, to Chicago. What percent gets there within 3 days? And I said, this doesn't sound fair. The only thing you guys do is load it onto a truck. Should you be responsible? And they said, well, you would think that wouldn't be fair, but all of a sudden, instead of under the old system where did you get everything loaded in a truck, we're now working with Chicago and the logistics people to make sure those goals are met. So all of a sudden, we're working together. Just changing the rules of the game, the objectives, have got people to cooperate that in the past have looked at themselves as autonomous units and not really cared about the whole system. So, yeah, that was really a cultural change for them. And it was also a chance for people to start realizing we're all in this together. So it was a radical cultural change because the performance measures are now gathered towards meeting customer needs or their requirements, meeting some financial goals, and to reach those, some internal process performance measures that would help them reach those goals. So it was really a lot more focused than it was before.
I know the Postal Service got quite savvy in terms of crafting performance measures. Tell us how they structured some of those measures in order to maximize employee motivation.
Yes. Let's say, for example, they're trying to move customer satisfaction. They, instead of saying, well, everybody should be at 60%, the real low performers would say, oh, there's no way I can reach that and forget it. High performers said, I got it, so I'm not going to do anything. They started what they call different cells. So even the low performer would be reinforced to move to another level. So it may not be at that 60, but they're moving in the right direction. And somebody went at the 70% level, again, the goal is about 60, would say, you'll get a bonus if you move even higher.
We should say that creating those types of segments or cells for different offices in terms of customer satisfaction isn't a strategy inherent to the balanced scorecard. Instead, I think your point is that the use of the balanced scorecard led to a stronger focus on customer outcomes in the U.S. Postal Service, which in turn led them to think hard about how do we craft useful metrics around customer service.
Exactly. Innovative thinking that occurred because of the balanced scorecard.
Finally, Ken, I'd like to conclude with a broader question than even the balanced scorecard. You've examined performance management systems closely over the years. Tell us a few pieces of advice for doing performance management well, whether you're using a balanced scorecard or a different approach.
Yeah, I'll give three pieces of advice. First, you got to get people involved. Engagement is important. They're the boots on the ground. Have them set some of the goals and standards of how we can improve performance. So some of those quality groups, performance improvement groups, customer relation groups, some of the best performing companies now say 70% of your time is doing your normal job. 30% of your time should be working with others to improve the organization. So that's the first, the engagement part. Secondly, you use these performance tools not as a stick, meaning if you use these, say, okay, now I can use these to evaluate people. If that's the sole purpose, you're going to fail. Because now those people you've engaged to help set goals are saying, well, okay, if I lower these goals, I can meet my goals, and then everyone will be happy. Well, that's not helping the organization. But if you say, well, let's work together, so it's not administrators, we versus them. So you're working together to meet goals that hopefully there can be a bonus based on total performance of the unit as opposed to individuals, evaluation, the accountability thing. We've always recommended you got to do that. If you're just using it as a stick to beat somebody, it's going to fail. They'll figure out ways to short circuit the system. The third one is, as a leader, you have to almost focus much more on managing your own behavior to get the best out of people. Again, to get them engaged. Instead of saying, do this, saying, here's a problem. How do you suggest we might do this? Or let's get other people together. Getting out there, walking around with people, talking with them, build up the culture. One of the organizations I'm working with now, he doesn't call himself the CEO. He calls himself the Chief Cultural Officer. As people come in each day, they put down with a magnet where they are, their energy level for that day. So if he sees somebody out there without a high energy level, he goes out and say, hey, what's going on? How can I help you? There's problems at home, different things we could do to help that person get more engaged in the organization. And it's really fun to watch.
My thanks to Ken Thompson for sharing his insights with us today. I'll post a link to the IBM Center report that he co-authored which includes much more information about applying the balanced scorecard to government organizations and includes two case studies as well. Ken, thanks again for being with us.
Andy, my pleasure. Anytime.